Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.
Welcome back to the dialogue with Diwa de Boer on Reality Check Radio, where we discuss politics, power, and culture. You can text your thoughts on 2057 or email your questions to inbox@realitycheck.radio. I'm joined now by Frederik and Daniel from Generation Identity in Denmark. I've interviewed Martin Selner about politics in Austria and Germany. You can find the replay on the website. And I've also spoken with Marcus Follen, the golden one, about politics in Sweden. And now we have a chance to get some insights from Denmark. So welcome to the show, Frederik and Daniel. Please introduce yourselves and let us know a little bit about your background.
Thank you so much. My name is Daniel, and I've been active in Generation Identity Denmark for about 4 years now. And in my daily life, I study theology at the university.
And how about you, Frederik?
Yeah, and my name is Frederik. I am 26 years old, and I've been an activist for 6.5 years now. Time flies. And in my daily life, I study European ethnology, which I'm almost finished.
Very interesting studies for both of you. Could you tell us a little bit about what Generation Identity is? And I've asked this before, but people in the audience may not remember. What is an identitarian, and what is it that you are doing?
Yeah, basically, Generation Identity is a pan-European movement, which started in 2012 in France. And here in Denmark, we were established in 2017, but it was first, I think, during 2018, a half or a year later, we became an official part of the identitarian movement. Before that, we were just called identitarian, and now we are called Generation Identity Denmark. So yeah, basically, we work towards the European cultures here in Europe. Be the leading ones, because where should it else be if not here? And we fight for a strong European identity and against the Islamization of our continent and against mass migration. And we work towards remigration, which is a very strong political idea for us. But maybe we could talk a bit about that later on.
Oh, I'll definitely ask about that a little bit later on. And you have anything to add to that, Frederik?
Yeah, I think you could also describe Generation Identity as a sort of a vanguard in the culture war, where our main MO is different sorts of nonviolent and creative activism.
And just quickly, what is identitarianism, I guess, as separate from other ideologies and politics? How's it different to, say, conservatism or liberalism or socialism?
Mm-hmm. I think that if you were to really take the core feature of identitarianism, it is to preserve and strengthen, in this case, Danish and European ethnocultural identity. We talk about ethnocultural identity. So that's basically the co-joining of, obviously, the ethnic part, so the continuity of peoples and the culture and traditions which we create, and these two things, they are inseparable. And that's sort of a actually semi-controversial to state nowadays. And a lot of conservative and more liberal-minded people, they will not describe identity in this way. They have more civic notions of identity, things like that. But we emphasize our organic, natural identities, both in terms of ethnocultural identity, but also family and things like that.
And for the listeners who may not be 100% sure where Denmark is on the map or what its history is, could you tell us a little bit about where Denmark is placed in Europe, how it's connected to some of its nearby countries, and maybe a very short overview of the history of how Denmark came to be?
Yeah, it's placed in the northern of Europe, so it's just above Germany, and it's a part of the Scandinavian countries. So yeah, above Denmark, there is Sweden and Norway. Yeah, maybe Frederik, you are strong in history, so maybe you could talk a a bit about that?
Yeah, well, basically, Denmark is a country which is very old. We have had a Danish kingdom for about 1,000 years. A fun fact is that we have the oldest Danish, the oldest national flag still in use. And we are 1/3 of the Scandinavian kingdoms. And that's sort of our extended family, our closest extended family, the other Scandinavian countries. And in newer times, so in the last century or so, we have become this strong, social, democratic welfare state like the other Scandinavian countries. And that's also very much our own. That's the story we tell ourselves. That's the thing that that defines the modern Danish nation, I would say. Yeah.
We had some elections in Europe recently, the European Union elections, and the big story from most European countries was sort of a shift towards the right, bigger wins for some of these parties that were in the European identity bloc or in the conservative bloc and so on. But I had a look at the results for Denmark, and I think they were a little bit different to most European countries.
Yeah, that's totally correct. The situation here in Denmark is quite different. Actually, the latest election for the European Parliament, it was actually the center-left who won. And I think there's different reasons why. One of the reasons why, I think, is we don't have a very good right wing in the parliament right now. We only have one party that's called the Danish People's Party. The other one we had until very recently, yeah, it's almost gone now. They are trying to reestablish themselves, but you couldn't vote on them here at the latest election. So, yeah, and also one of the other reasons I think is because the Social Democratic Party, which is the big one here in Denmark, one of the big ones, they are leaning towards a more conservative thinking on immigration, for example, if you compare it to the Social Democratic Party in Sweden. So I think that's two of the reasons why the right wing here in Denmark didn't win.
Yeah, that seems to be something unique in a way about Denmark. In a lot of European countries, it's basically become impossible for left-wing countries to oppose immigration, or at least they've chosen not to. But it seems like in Denmark, it's different. Is that because you've sort of won, in a sense, like that it's not socially acceptable to be so pro-immigration? Like, has the conversation shifted a lot on that recently?
Basically, in the last 10 years, we have had a social democratic party, which has really seized in a lot of ways the issue of immigration. So they have changed their policies a lot in the last, or they say they have changed their policies a lot in the last 10 years. So they sort of pretend in their rhetoric to be really harsh in their migration policy, which they had sort of adapted from this right-wing party called the Danish People's Party, which now leaves them a bit redundant. And I think that the Social Democrats here, they have looked at other social democratic parties in other Western European nations, the other social democrats in Scandinavia, Labour in England, and so on, and seen their failures to address problems regarding mass immigration. So they have done sort of their part to say, okay, the Overton window has shifted and a lot of people demand that this issue is being taken seriously. So they have sort of distanced themselves and then subjects from other social democratic parties. But the thing is here that it gives sort of an illusion that we have this base center-left social democrats, and that Denmark is like... we are on a totally new trajectory politically, but that's not really the case. Yes, they are slightly different than other center-left parties, but at the end of the day, we are still on the same demographic path as other Western nations, and nothing truly is being done about the issues regarding immigration. So that's the short story.
Part of the maybe problem in Europe is basically the open borders between all of the different European countries. So if you have illegal immigrants that are coming into the southern border in Europe, that they can just come in to Denmark, is that basically still a problem? Or is a lot of the immigration driven by like how friendly government, like each specific European government has a policy towards giving benefits to migrants or refugees? And are they like attracted to Denmark in the same numbers as say other Scandinavian countries? Or do you see the numbers are a bit lower in terms of mass migration?
They are a bit lower, but as Frederick just said, it's a lot about the rhetoric. It's much talk and not so much action. So we're still seeing numbers, and we're still seeing this mass migration continuing to also Denmark. But maybe the social democratic rhetoric here in Denmark makes the immigrants want to maybe go to Sweden before they want to go to Denmark. But yeah, but we don't have so much border control, so you can say it's just a bridge between us and Sweden. So we are also experiencing some of the same problems as Sweden do, even though we don't let the influx, even though we don't take so much migrants and refugees in.
You mentioned very early on that Generation Identity is opposed to the Islamization of Europe. When I spoke with Martin Follen from Sweden, also Martin from Austria, there seemed to be a very big problem in terms of Islam, terrorism that was being caused by radical Islamists, and you know, increases in crime and so on. Do you face the same problems as these other European countries as well?
Yeah, definitely. We definitely do. I would say that we haven't had any Islamic terror attacks for a long time, basically because they are foiled all the time by our secret services. There's a new story like every few months that some Islamists are planning an attack, but I don't know, either they are incompetent or the secret services are really, really competent. But either way, it shows that the motivation and the hatred is there, and the willingness to commit these attacks are there. But so far, they have been foiled most of the times. But it's just a matter of time. And as we see in France and in Germany, these where they have had a lot of larger attacks in the last years, now they are getting affected by smaller attacks, but it's all the time. It's all the time. And if we continue the way we are doing here in Denmark, then we will see the same things happening in a few decades, because we are not on the same level, but we are just behind.
And the government that you have, like I was having a little look at the makeup of the government. It seemed to sort of be a strange, like socialist liberal kind of alliance. Like it's hard to, I can only read the English language reports about these parties and what they claim to believe. But you sort of seems to be a bit of like a moderate conservative liberal socialist alliance. And if you look at the opposition parties, like one of the bigger opposition parties is the Denmark Democrats and the Greens, which is basically like a left sort of right wing, more right wing parties and more left wing parties are in opposition in Denmark. So is the government accurately described as sort of like more of a sort of centrist type of government, or is it really socialist? And maybe for the audience, this might be useful. As you mentioned already, the kind of the welfare states that your Scandinavian countries are known for, is it basically the, when we talk about these socialist parties, they're really maintaining the welfare state, but they're not, as we would think, like they're communists who want to destroy the economy and so on. Maybe the definition that you have of a social democrat is very different to the one that we have.
Yeah, it might be, but to answer the first thing you asked about, you're totally correct about it's a center government now. It's not leaning towards necessarily socialism or social democraticism or what's it called. It's three parties. The two of them are quite liberal, and the other one is the big party, the Social Democratic Party. And this government we have now, it was elected 1.5 years ago. And it's very unpopular at the moment. And I think that the left also now at this European Parliament election we just had, I think the left and the center left have capitalized on this unpopular government. And I think the reasons why the right wing has not capitalized on it, it's probably because, as I mentioned earlier, that the political right is a bit weak in Denmark right now, if you see it on a scale of parties.
Would you describe the weakness of the right? Is it a personality problem? Are the social conditions very different? I compare this to New Zealand, where we have just recently had a new sort of, you know, more right-wing government. Why are they not able to capitalize?
It's a very, very good question, and it's very hard to answer, because I'm not quite sure, actually, because in the party, the one right wing party we have right now, the only one, it's called the Danish People Party, as we mentioned earlier. Yeah, they actually have a few good people in the party. Also, one of the politicians that were elected last time. Also, actually, the top candidate for the European Parliament, he's actually quite good. Also, talking about remigration, and he's very harsh on immigration policy and so on. But he just distanced himself from the AfD, Alternative for Deutschland. So yeah, it's very hard to actually answer it. So I don't know if you had something to add, Frederik.
Yeah, sure. I think what you said, Daniel, was very indicative that they have not been able to capitalize on this the failure of the current government, because they take this sort of run of the mill, vanilla, center right, conservative stance, where they rest on their laurels from 10 years ago and they say, it's our fault that we're not like Sweden. But it's like, come on, guys, let's talk about something new and interesting. And instead, they are, like you said, we have this head candidate for the European Parliament elections who is distancing himself from the AfD, which is one of the only European parties who represent true alternative, I would say. And then if you look at their campaign for the elections, it's atrocious, it's boring. It's basically about how the EU is horrible because they regulate the size of champagne bottles. And also one of the main topics of concern has been about Israel in the last many months. They tend to talk about Israel more than anything else, really. So I would say that some of the... We just have to look at their campaign to see their failure.
And then how do you fit into this in terms of the activism that you do in Denmark, how you're trying to change the conversation, how you're trying to change the politics? What is it specifically that GI in Denmark does?
Well, like we talked about in the beginning, we try to do these creative actions and happenings. So that would be different kinds of street theater, of course, banner drops, big and small, aesthetic interventions, and more basic, smaller scale activism, like putting up posters, handing out flyers, things like that. And we use this method to point the spotlight on issues and subjects that we deem important. Our last big action was at the one of the Pride parades over here, where we did a huge banner drop that said, stop the madness, you cannot change your gender. And that was quite successful, I would say. So that's an example of many other happenings that we have done throughout the years.
Mm. Yeah, and also you can say, especially here in Denmark, we have a lot of humor and irony, and we are also trying to talk into that when we are doing activism. So maybe it's something you don't see so much in France, but we can also dress up as we did recently a couple of months ago, I think. We dressed up as Facebook guards who control people's opinion to an event. And yeah, that's a funny way to show that this repression and censorship on especially social media, it's a way to address that. So yeah, we're also doing a lot of irony and humor in our activism.
Well, that's good to hear, especially, you know, the Germans, the French, they're not known for being particularly funny. So I'm glad that you guys are doing something a bit different. You mentioned two key issues there, specifically the LGBT issue, transgenderism specifically, and freedom of speech. How big of a political issue are those in Denmark? Is it the same as everywhere else? Is it as bad as in the UK, as bad as New Zealand, as bad as America? Or and what kind of I guess hate speech laws do you have as well? It's a topical topical thing. You know, the people in Germany and the UK especially go to prison for speech crimes. What does that look like in Denmark?
We have some hate speech laws against that also, not specifically, but also the LGBT can be if you criticize someone or a group or something like that could be an issue. We're not facing the same problems regarding to that LGBT stuff ideology if you compare it to, for example, England and Sweden. But we definitely have some issues here also in Denmark. We have also done some activism. We did, I think, a year ago outside a library, which invited a drag show performer. And he should perform for children. And so we did a simple action where we hand out flyers to inform the local people, and that's a way to show our motstand. Frederik, can you translate that?
Our discontent.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Yes, your opposition to those events. And here in New Zealand, I'll let you know, most people in the audience will probably already know, but we have a pastor, he's Maori is our native people, and he has been leading his people in protests against the drag queens in libraries, and he's actually had a few events cancelled. So just the other week as well, they cancelled one. Last month they cancelled another tour because he keeps threatening to come and disrupt, you know, sort of to protest outside. And then they say, oh, we're scared, we're afraid of our safety, and then they don't turn up. Oh, he's very peaceful, of course, no violence, no, he's very peaceful, but they get scared and they get all of these dozens of these men who are very large and intimidating, and they get scared. So it's a very active issue in New Zealand at the moment as well.
I would say, to answer your question on a more general level, that the same thing as in other Western nations, we are also influenced a lot by this hyper-progressive gender ideology. But as with immigration and things like that, it's still not on the same level. We have a more level-headed political discussion, I would say. And not the same amount of hate speech laws and things like that. And I think that a big part of it is that our boomer generation, they are a bit more resistant to it. So more just like regular people as they come, they are intuitively a bit more hesitant when this LGBT ideology, it focuses on children, for example, and says that they can change their gender and they should be experimented with hormones and stuff like that. It's a bit more dangerous subject to tread and a lot more controversial than in other countries, I would say.
Yeah, in that case, you have a little bit of an advantage too, in that if you're behind, you have more time to raise awareness as well, because obviously it's only going to get worse if you don't oppose it and you don't stop it and you don't try to turn things around. And so, on the whole, how successful would you rate what you're doing? That's always a difficult one, but are your identitarian ideas going to have some influence, you think? Are you making a real difference?
I would definitely say so, yes. Of course, I'm biased, but I would say that we actually just have to look at not ourselves, but our opponents, actually, and because what they have done in the last decade and why they have the cultural political hegemony is that they have done activism, they have done metapolitics, and it has worked very well. And that's also basically what the Generation Identity has been inspired by. It's by activism done by our ideological opponents throughout the years. I would just say that we do it better, bigger and better. And I definitely see very tangible evidence that we are affecting the political debate, discussion. We introduce new terms like remigration and ethnocultural identity. And I definitely see that since I've been an activist for so many years, how we introduce these terms and ideas to the general discussion.
Yeah, I totally agree with Frederick. And yeah, I will also say that a way that shows that our activism definitely works, it's if you look on the topics we started to address a few years ago here in Denmark. As I said in the beginning, we started up in 2017, and if you see what we have addressed in those years since that time, you can see that at that time it was met with great criticism, but now it's becoming more and more mainstream, the things we are talking about. Maybe not so much the topics you just mentioned about LGBT and so on, but on migration, it's become more mainstream now. And I mean, people in the parliament, actually, not many of them, of course, but a few of them are actually talking about the Great Replacement now, which was called a conspiracy theory a few years ago when we started to making activism and stuff like that. But now it's been addressed also in the parliament, and also political parties are talking now about a remigration plan. So yeah, I think that our activism definitely works.
Yeah, I have been interviewing and studying with different patriotic and nationalist groups around the world, and looking at in the last few years, especially a lot of the metapolitics that you're talking about, the discussion about politics, about how to do politics, is spread everywhere around the world, really, and just in the last, say, 5 years. But obviously you've been doing it for longer, and in Germany and France have been doing something similar for longer. And you can really see how, as you mentioned, remigration and the Great Replacement, just issues around mass migration, have become focal points in many Western countries all around the world. Even the English-speaking ones, where now it's considered to be a mainstream topic, as you said. So the discussion about remigration that was, as you said, is now coming up in Danish politics. Are there any concrete ideas that these politicians are putting forward now? What's the scale of what they are proposing in terms of dealing with the effects?
I don't see at the moment so much actions of that, but actually we did this. I don't know if you can see it, but it's a flyer for 30 things you could do to address this and make remigration real. And we actually sent this to all the politicians in the parliament, and a lot of them definitely just ignored it. But some of them, also back years ago, they just posted it on their own social media and said that they were actually agreeing with all 30 things we just mentioned in this. So yeah, but we don't see so much action, but at the moment. But I think there's hope for the future.
Yeah, it has to start with talking. Once people are talking about it, then you can hope for action to follow, and of course keep up the pressure. And that's a good example for everyone, anyone who's listening, whatever your politics, whatever the issue might be that you want to push, is that putting together plans, putting that into the hands of politicians, taking activism that people can see out in the public, that all of that is going to have a difference if you're committed to it and if you do it over the long run. as you guys are doing year after year, and you keep focused, that you can actually make a big difference.
Mm.
So thank you very much to both of you for joining me this afternoon. Very much appreciate your time. And if you do have any final words, final bits of advice for the audience, please give those now. And to the listeners, if you hang on after this as well, we will be back after the break. But first, for you, Daniel, have you got any final things that you would like to tell the audience?
No, I would just say that the fight continues for European identity, and thank you so much for having us on your show. So thank you.
And you, Frederick?
Yeah, well, I would just say thank you for inviting us. It's been a pleasure. For the audience, I would point them in the direction of our fellow identitarian Telegram channel, which is English speaking, which is called Action Raider Europe. And it is also where you can find some of our greatest action posts.
Well, thank you very much to both of you. I hope the listeners that you learned some interesting things about Denmark. And as well, if you've got any comments or questions, please do send those through. And we will be right back after this break.
Thank you for tuning in to RCR, Reality Check Radio. If you like what you're listening to or dislike what you're listening to, either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057, that's 2057, or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We would love to hear from you, so connect with us today.